Hey, thanks for downloading the podcast. And remember, if you want to listen live, download the iHeartRadio app, download the TuneIn app, and just search for Fantasy Sports Radio Network, and you can listen to this program live. Also, if you want to watch the video of this podcast, check us out on YouTube, on Twitch, or on Periscope, and type in, you guessed it, Fantasy Sports Network. You'll find us there. Enjoy the show, and thanks for listening.
Fantasy Sports Today.
This year, it's been anybody's ballgame. From Utah finishing as a 5 seed, getting past Oklahoma City, it's been a wild run. And then Philadelphia, the same thing. It's all about trusting the process and trusting the process. And the process led them to being outside the playoffs for a long time this season. And then everybody kind of gets healthy. They start meshing. They finish as one of the best teams in the entire NBA. This entire year has been competitive. And these playoffs is just kind of indicative of all of that.
Weekdays, 1 p.m. Eastern and Saturdays, 9 a.m. Eastern on FNTSY Radio and on your popular podcast providers.
You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Fantasy Sports Today.
Good Tuesday, everybody. It's Fantasy Sports Today. Special edition. NFL Draft Recap Fantasy Football Special. Football all day today. And what better way to do it with myself than the same two that we brought in for the previous part. Heading into the draft, it's Emory Hunt and Elliot Crist here to break down everything from the draft. How you guys feeling? You guys got some sleep after the draft's finally over?
There's no sleep when it's draft. You know, I came in and then I had to turn right back around and get right back on that mission. So no sleep.
Elliot, I know you didn't get any sleep. Well, I know you were running to the office trying to get here in time.
Yeah, the train decided to stop halfway, and then I had like 2 minutes to make it, and I'm just happy I didn't truck anybody. I had a couple nice jukes along the way to make sure I got here in time. But, yeah, I'll start sleeping in a couple weeks after the post-draft recap is done. But right now, it's still no sleep.
Yeah, I know we almost didn't have Emory because I was having a lack of sleep and was failing to communicate with people. So I know how it's going. Let's jump right into this. We're going to be looking at a fantasy football perspective because we could talk about the draft all day long, which everybody on this show has probably done at some point. And look, I've been one of the people who have already gone on the whole Gettleman rant and the Barkley value and all that type of stuff. But we're going to look at it purely fantasy football-wise. We'll start off with the quarterbacks. And Emory, I'm going to Elliot first because we know he is the Baker Mayfield lover of the group. And I have a feeling, Elliot, you're a little bit torn because he did go the first pick, first quarterback off the board, but it wasn't to the Jets.
Yeah, it's one of those situations where I'm happy for him because, you know, he gets to see like that. Like, as a huge fan, I'm happy for him. But as a Jets fan, I was a little sad. But, you know, it sounds like the Giants had him number one on their board, too, because they said once Mayfield was done at one, they didn't have interest in trades, which means that he was probably the guy they were thinking of. Sean McVay said he would have traded his whole draft for him. And the Jets basically told Darnold, like, we didn't expect you to be here. You weren't the guy we traded up for. So it feels like the NFL was a lot higher on Baker Mayfield than a lot of other people, and I'm really happy for him, and I think Cleveland actually has a lot of tools and weapons for him to be really successful going forward.
So let's talk about that real quick, Emory, because he is the first pick. They did trade for Tyrod Taylor. We know what Tyrod Taylor can be fantasy-wise. We know he could be real-life fantasy-wise. And, you know, you talk about fantasy, he's probably underrated because he gets you about 15 points per game. He doesn't have the ceiling of most quarterbacks, but all that being said, the number one pick, where we are in this day and age in football in general, when do you think Mayfield takes over, if at all, this year?
You know, it's interesting when you look at guys like Tyrod Taylor and guys of that same caliber, they are one incompletion or a couple of incompletions away from the fans calling for the next quarterback, right? But I think in this actual situation with Tyrod Taylor, with the offensive weapons they built around him and plus the way he plays the game, we probably won't see Mayfield this year at all. I think it would have to be a situation where Kurt Warner and Eli Manning, where the team is winning and they're still going to make the move regardless, because I believe he's on a 1 year deal, so to speak. I think so. And, you know, if you feel as though if it's even, then you might as well put the young guy in there. But we'll see how that plays out. I think Tyrod Taylor would do his part to keep him off the field, but the fans will get what they want to see in Mayfield at some point. I'm going to say probably week 8 or 9 in the season.
All right. Well, let's take it to the next level then. If we do see Mayfield, I'll go back to you first here, Elliot. Is this stock up for the entire offense? Is the stock up for specific receivers in your mind, like Gordon, but not Landry, or Landry, but not Gordon? Like, where do you see the biggest impact and change going from Tyrod Taylor to Baker Mayfield?
So I think a lot of it has to do with how much they are willing to unleash a rookie quarterback as opposed to protect him early on. But I think the player that would be helped the most is Josh Gordon. You know, Baker Mayfield had a really accurate deep ball. He was very comfortable taking chances down the field. And that's something, statistically speaking, Tyrod Taylor has not done very well. And we know Josh Gordon is a deep play threat. So I think that Josh Gordon would get the biggest bump. I agree with Emery that my guess is week 8. Now there's a shot that he has like a Russell Wilson-like preseason and just makes it impossible for them not to play him. But ultimately, unless the Browns are like 5-3, like if they're like a 3-5, 2-6 team, which is very real, like it's a realistic possibility, then you probably see the young guy. But I think that Josh Gordon's the one that gets helped out most by Baker Mayfield.
Yeah, I was looking at that schedule, and I think this team could actually start off 5-4, and then that second half after that bye is just brutal. So I could kind of see that scenario playing out. We're going to stick to the quarterbacks. We're going to come back to them. But since we're talking about the Browns, we might as well just incorporate all of the Browns. Well, not the biggest parts of it. So the other surprise here is they draft Nick Chubb, Emery. And, you know, we go back to Chubb. We go back to before the injury in college. He was looking like if everything was progressing along that path, he would have been in the conversation with Barkley at the top of this draft. We know the injury took a lot away from him. He's bounced back quite a bit, and a testament to him how severe that injury was to see where he is today. I love the kid's talent. Obviously, still not quite 100%, but they also brought in Carlos Hyde. Is this now like, hey, Chubb's coming in, Carlos Hyde's past the third on this depth chart, or do you think it's going to be a competition up till day one and it's going to be a fantasy frustration?
It probably, from a fantasy perspective, it's probably going to be a frustration because I see both Carlos Hyde and Nick Chubb as the same guy as far as, you know, what they bring to the table. You know, Hyde may even be a better receiver. So you also have to count in Duke Johnson. You know, the fact that Duke Johnson is the best receiver out of the three, and they're going to try to find ways to make all of them successful. So I think if you're from a fantasy perspective, you probably want to stay away from Browns running backs because I think all three will cancel each other out. No one guy will be the lead guy because none of them have that special trait as the guy that went second overall.
Yeah, I think we talked a little bit pre-show that the worst possible landing spot for Saquon Barkley from a fantasy perspective was the Browns because Duke Johnson was there. And Duke Johnson's one of the best pass-catching backs in the NFL. And then they signed Carlos Hyde. And while I think Chubb is better than Hyde, anytime you pay someone $20 million over 4 years, you're going to want to see him on the football field as well. So to me, it's going to be a really good NFL situation and a really poor fantasy situation. And one that, if you were in best ball drafts and loading up on Nick Chubb, I would be pretty disappointed in that landing spot. I'm probably going to avoid him in fantasy altogether this year.
All right, it looks like we're going to get right back to the quarterbacks. But real quickly here, the Antonio Callaway thing. I was actually a little bit surprised, but I see the Browns making a lot of sense because of the draft capital they have, because of the talent they now have on this roster. Like, hey, if we waste this pick and Callaway ends up doing nothing because all of his off-the-field issues, oh well. If we fall into somebody who could potentially be our third wide receiver, potentially even more than that down the road, it's all just boost for this point. Talent-wise, what's the realistic possibility? Like, say he has his off-the-field issues behind him, the whole smoking weed and heading into the combine, all this type of stuff, right? Off-the-field issues behind him. Can Callaway crack the top three wide receiver rotation on this depth chart?
Absolutely. He's already, in my opinion, better than Corey Coleman. I have a higher grade on him than I had on Coleman coming out. I thought Coleman was a third-round talent, and a lot of people wanted him in the first round and talked him up as a first-round guy. I didn't see that from what he brought to the table at Baylor. I see Callaway as a first-round talent. Because he can play all three, he also can help out as a returner. He has sure hands. He runs great routes. He's good after the catch, all of which you want from a receiver that can also play the X, the flanker, or even inside as a slot. So just from a talent perspective, I think he's the most ready to go and really take over that job from Corey Coleman. So he has to really bring it this preseason. Otherwise, he's going to find himself the odd man out. But you'll see all four guys within the mix in this offense.
I think that's a really good point you make, Jake, about how they have so much draft capital that they're able to take risks like this, right? Like the year before, it was the kid from Florida, the defensive tackle, Brantley, right?
Mm-hmm. And Caleb Brantley.
Yeah, they weren't 100% positive whether or not he actually had the domestic violence issue or not, and then it turns out it was completely fabricated. So he went from a second to a fifth rounder, but they were able to take that chance. With Callaway, you know, if I'm the Browns, I'm just kind of hoping one of Josh Gordon and Antonio Callaway stay straight because they're both tremendous talents. Callaway gets down the field incredibly well, tracks the ball over his shoulder. Like you mentioned, great after the catch. I would agree with you. He's more NFL ready than Corey Coleman was coming into the league. He's got a better route tree. He's a better route runner, probably stronger hands. And Coleman's kind of worn out his welcome and had injuries, and this isn't the, you know, the management group that drafted him. So I think he could easily beat out Corey Coleman. And there's even been rumors of Coleman possibly getting traded. So I think that's a that's a pretty good call.
And also, there's a connection with Callaway and Alonzo Highsmith. So that's why they felt comfortable making that pick, because they go way back. There's some ties there.
I saw this tweet on online. It was Mike Clay at ESPN. Emery, tell me this. Is this not one of the trades that makes way too much sense, so it probably won't happen? The Giants send Eric Flowers for Corey Coleman?
You know what's funny about that trade is that when we were talking about scenarios pre-draft of when the Giants first came out with the rumor that they were going to put Odell Beckham on a trading block, I was like, okay, well, since no one's talking about Lamar Jackson, have the Browns take Barkley number one, trade that fourth pick with Buffalo, take those two first, take Lamar Jackson at 12, send 22 and Coleman and a first next year to the Giants for Odell Beckham, and it would have been perfect. You know, so
that made way too much sense for that to happen.
So I can see why, you know, a Flowers for Coleman trade would actually benefit both parties, because, you know, they definitely need changes of scenery.
All right, so let's talk about the next three quarterbacks, and I'm leaving out Lamar Jackson. We're going to spend some time on him specifically. But again, this is because we're taking a fancy angle here. We all know that Lamar Jackson is probably the least – not probably, he's definitively the least likely to play this year. So let's talk about Darnold, Rosen, and Allen. Now, they're all behind people on their team. In your opinion, Elliot, who do you think has the best chance to start the soonest this year and have at least somewhat of a fantasy impact?
I'm gonna say Allen, but for soonest to start, his best fantasy impact will be for opposing teams' defenses. But you know, he's got to beat out AJ McCarron, and you know, if you're the 7th overall pick and you can't beat out AJ McCarron, you're in all kinds of trouble. Now, I think he's in all kinds of trouble as it is. You know, Pat Thorman tweeted out that Josh Allen has a career 56% completion percentage. Kelvin Benjamin has a career 57% catch rate. Andre Holmes has a 52% catch rate, and Zay Jones has a 42% career catch rate. So they're not exactly about to operate as a very efficient offense. But, you know, I think his path is the clearest. I think the Jets drafted Darnold with the anticipation that he's sitting at least half the year. He's only 20 years old right now. Josh McCown is their guy. He knows he's going to mentor him, but I think they want to bring him along slowly because he's younger and he had some of those interceptions and he kind of needs to work some mentally and not just falling in love with his first read. So I think he's going to fall back. And with Rosen, I think they're very comfortable with having Bradford play a whole year. Now, I think Rosen's NFL ready, but Bradford, they just paid him $20 million. You don't exactly pay a guy $20 million and then put him on the bench right away. So, but Bradford also has an injury history, so Rosen has a really good chance to start. But honestly, there's not necessarily like a giant fantasy impact year one for any of these guys as of right now, in my opinion.
Well, here's the thing, too, because it's funny you leave out Lamar Jackson, because that's...
Well, I wanted to dedicate... Dedicate like a special segment just to him.
Yeah, that's fine. But I'm just saying, like, that is the one that has the best fantasy potential in this year.
Of course.
Because here's the part that people forget. You got to play the preseason games. And that's where people will thrive. When you look at, let's say, Baker Mayfield playing against backups with backups, he's always had the ideal situation. So now you're going to put him in a situation where he has to deal with unfavorable conditions and he won't look his best. You're going to put Josh Rosen in the same situation. You're going to put – we know Josh Allen can't play in either situation. And so you're going to put Darnold in a situation where he's playing with backups. Now, granted, the Jets have 17 good tight ends, and their depth chart at receiver is quite honestly better than what people give it credit for. However,
You know right now, Emery, they do have 17 wide receivers on their depth chart now.
But the Jets are probably have the best tight end position in the division. Top to bottom, they're so deep at position. I love the potential. But I think when you – and now you put Lamar Jackson in the preseason against backups, the first time he takes off and runs and a couple of big plays he makes, they're going to start to – hey, well, we're paying Flacco this year anyway. This guy is clearly better because of the wild plays. Let's see if we can get him out there early.
I disagree. I mean, I don't disagree that Lamar Jackson can't make plays in the preseason and can't develop into a really good player, but I can't see them benching Joe Flacco year one for Lamar Jackson.
It happened in Seattle.
It did happen in Seattle, but that was Matt Flynn, not Joe Flacco. And while Joe Flacco is not very good, I'm not trying to make a case for Joe Flacco. He's better than Matt Flynn. Again, that's not necessarily a compliment.
He is better than Matt Flynn.
And, you know, the Ravens obviously like Lamar Jackson. They went up and got him at the end of the first round. But I think they are very comfortable in letting him sit for a year and develop. And that's kind of the way they're going to look at it. I don't disagree that Lamar Jackson's going to make plays in the preseason. I think Baker Mayfield's going to make a lot of plays in the preseason. I think Josh Allen's going to really struggle. And I think Josh Rosen and Sam Darnold will look okay in the preseason. I don't disagree with you that Lamar Jackson's the highest ceiling fantasy player of all the quarterbacks. I just disagree that in year one he's going to have a major impact.
Yeah, let's come back to that real quick because, Emery, you know, we both love Lamar Jackson, and you know how I feel about it because I'm going to go back to it. And again, it doesn't make sense as a whole, but when you look at what they did, I'm going to continue to go back to the fact of as soon as they signed Robert Griffin, you know what I said. I said they were going to draft Lamar Jackson, send him for a year, have him under that tutelage, and get him into the situation next year when Flacco's contract's a little bit different. I agree with you, though. I wouldn't be surprised if he starts putting the heat on him just from a talent standpoint. But I want to go one name that we skipped over because Rosen, we know, is probably going to start as soon as Sam Bradford gets hurt. It's going to happen at some point. Allen would have to be the favorite just given the competition, AJ McCarron. Let's talk about Sam Darnold, though, for a second. Sam Darnold's the third pick in the draft. Josh McCown is fine. Josh McCown's always been solid. Emery, is there no chance that Sam Darnold is starting week one with the Jets?
Why can't the Jets just hire Josh McCown as a coach and free up a roster spot, right? Like, why do you have to continuously have him out there babysitting a guy that you're going to draft? So I think it's going to be Darnold, McCown, and also Bridgewater. I think Petty and Hackenberg are going to be gone. So, you know, if Bridgewater proves to be healthy, they're going to keep him as probably the number two on game day. And, you know, Darnold is their guy. I think you got to get rid of the other two guys that you've had on the roster. It doesn't make sense to keep McCown when – now, let's flip it the other way. If Bridgewater does prove to be healthy enough and competent enough in the preseason, then McCown is gone. Then you keep Petty and you keep Darnold, obviously, and Darnold probably goes to number two in that situation. I think Teddy Bridgewater is the wild card here because that could help them not keep McCown and just hire McCown as the doggone coach.
Yeah, well, and the thing, though, too, is it's kind of – you said it's a weird situation because Bridgewater has only owned $500,000. He has some bonuses if he obviously stays on the team and stuff like that, but – he might be the one. I think that makes the most sense of what you said is the Darnold, McCown, Bridgewater. It seems like the most obvious, and you get rid of Petty and the others. But I agree. The McCown at this point looks like a good coach. And we're going to come back from the break. Elliot, I'm going to get your take real quick on Sam Darnold. And then we're going to drop into the running backs because the running back, that's where all the value is for fantasy-wise. So don't go anywhere. It's Fantasy Sports Today on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Friends, if you want to win at fantasy sports, wouldn't you listen to people who have already won at fantasy sports? I'm going to tell you about DailyRoto.com. Don't be intimidated by the DraftKings and FanDuel sharks, even the fantasy draft sharks. The guys at DailyRoto.com have not only won $1 million amongst one of the writers, but they've created three others. That's four people who have won millionaire contests from this content alone. Don't be fooled by screenshots talking about $25,000 winners from other places. Go to DailyRoto.com where they have a proven track record of creating millionaires. DailyRoto.com. Tell them Greg Sussman sent you.
Welcome back to Fantasy Sports Today. It is the NFL Draft Fantasy Football Recap Special. So, Emery Hunt, Kelly, Chris, and we left off with Sam Darnold. Got my take, got Emery's take real quick with Elliot. I go back to basically the question I asked, and I said, is there a chance we could see Sam Darnold week one? I mean, it's not like Josh McCown, the future. It's not like saying, hey, you know, Sam Darnold, let's find out. This is the number three pick of the draft that we fell into. Are thrilled about Elliot is granted. There's a lot of number twos and threes in this wide receiver core, not a true number one, but why not get him out right now?
Yeah, so I don't disagree with your logic. I just think the Jets are ultimately going to go with Josh McCown right after they sign him. They pronounce him the starter. Like Emery and I were just talking off air that I mean I'm not a Josh McCown guy, but he did actually play pretty well last year, the best he's ever played in his career. And you know, I think they want to see if they can get off to a hot start and rally behind the defense and see if they can go somewhere. So. And it's quite possible Darnold lights up the preseason and gets the job because if it's close, they're going to play him. But ultimately, I think Darnold will probably come in about week 7-8 and play the second half of the season. And if it's okay, real quick, I'd love to read a quick Josh Allen stat. Among the 35 quarterbacks over the last 3 years that were in the draft classes, new Bills quarterback Josh Allen is third from last in yards per attempt at 6.7, third from last in quarterback rating, second to last in completion percentage, and last in percentage of off-throw targets at 16.3% of his throws were off target. And that's from Mike Clay. So I just want
to say, yeah, make sure we give credit. Yes, yeah,
absolutely.
Ahead.
No, I'm not going to just pretend that I made that all up.
but yeah, you could have been, and would have been right.
Yeah, exactly. My number, yeah, just to point out how much of a reach that was and how much in trouble that Bills offense is in, that, you know, even if he plays, Josh Allen is a guy that I want to stay very far away from in fantasy.
No, and that's the thing is, you mentioned it too. You're talking about the catch rates of these guys on this team. And I know Emery and I, we went on about Zay Jones last year and realized when you're talking about a 5-wide offense and all that type of stuff, where the volume came from and the numbers and everything. I think this is bad for the anything. Like, I don't want Kelvin Benjamin on my fantasy football team. I don't want Zay Jones. Like, I don't want anybody if you start in a quarterback's position. But all right, let's talk about the running back. And we're not going to do this with the Giants because you're just going to get me ticked off. We're going to go on this whole rant about what they did for Saquon Barkley for the value in the franchise. But as Emery always says, I want the guy that scores touchdowns. And from a fantasy perspective, you don't get much better than this because it's the fact that, hey, he's coming in. He's the lead option. There's no question there. We know the talent. I've never denied the talent. I was one of the people that, yeah, Emery knows this too. Last year's running back draft class, I said, don't forget, Saquon Barkley is even better than anything we have in this draft class here. I thought I was going to have him at 7. I had him as my RB7 before we had the draft. I actually did my projection. Surprisingly enough, he jumped to number 5. The only running backs I have in front of him are Le'Veon Bell, David Johnson, Ezekiel Elliott, Todd Gurley. Are you with me on this?
Yeah, I think when you look at Barkley, to be honest, if I was to throw out a projection and statistically, I'm looking at him probably as a 1,400-yard rusher, 10 rushing touchdowns, 6 receiving touchdowns. I think he's going to be a monster this season and will totally open up everything offensively for the Giants. This division has now become the running back division outside of Philadelphia, but all of these guys have tremendous tailbacks and they're going to open up their offense. The Giants on that turf with the guy in Barkley is going to, and you can't really crowd the box to try to stop the run because you don't want to leave Beckham, Shepard, or Ingram one-on-one because you're going to eat all day. So this fit and this offense is going to lead itself to having a lot of success fantasy-wise for Saquon Barkley.
So when you look at draft capital, the last this decade, there have been 5 guys that were drafted in the top 10 in the NFL draft, and all 5 guys had top 10 PPR finishes in terms of running backs this year. They all averaged over 20 touches a game, except for Todd Gurley, who was at like 19.8, and that was coming back from the ACL. So we're going to round that up for 20 for the sake of my argument. And the other one that didn't was Christian McCaffrey because he had like 14.8 touches per game, but he also led all running backs in targets. And then we talked about his receiving ability. Pat Shurmur talked about how important that is to him. He basically said, if you can't catch, I have no use for you. And last year, on a per-snap basis, Jerick McKinnon saw more targets than Todd Gurley and Le'Veon Bell. So that should tell you what kind of workload he's about to get. So I have the draft capital. I have the receiving game. I have the fact that there's not really any competition for carries. I mean, over 700 carries of the team last year from Shane Vereen, Orleans Darkwa are now gone. The only real concern is Jonathan Stewart kind of vulturing touchdowns from him at the goal line because he saw, I think, like 12 carries inside the 5-yard line last year. So that's my only concern from Saquon Barkley. But Jake, I'm with you. He's locked in at RB5 with RB1 upside. I mean, he's going to have the workload of Le'Veon Bell, David Johnson, Todd Gurley, and Zeke Elliott, and probably a higher reception ceiling than Zeke Elliott. So right now he's going about RB8, but I think RB5 is his floor. And, you know, he's certainly locked in as an RB1, and I'm all over him this year for fantasy.
Real quick for you, Emery, is specifically because, you know, you play the position, you come from this background. I feel like this is a question I just want to ask for you. They drafted Will Hernandez in the 2nd round, and I thought they might start him initially at right guard, see if he can handle left, but they already talk about just plugging him in at left and going forward. So you have Solder and Hernandez on the left. You have question marks, everything to the right. As coming from an NFL, coming from the NFL defenses and seeing that, is this going to be a concern that, like, oh, maybe the Giants always run to the left and try to avoid running to the right, and that's where we get there, you know, maybe Barkley can't even get to the line of scrimmage heading to the right.
Here's the thing, and this is what Barkley possesses that a lot of backs don't have. And when you're running weak side, that says a lot, because the majority of NFL teams or football teams in general are right-handed. So running weak side is something that teams don't normally do unless they have a beast. When the Seahawks had Walter Jones and Sean Alexander, they ran left. They ran weak side, which is very tough to defend because it's just you as the back and that one backer on the outside. You make him miss, it's off to the races. And when you got a guy like Saquon Barkley who can create his own shot, so to speak, the blocking doesn't have to be perfect. So you can run left, you can run right, you can run up the middle. He's going to find work. And the good part about it in the NFL, there won't be a lot of east-west running as far as him being aligned 4 yards next to the quarterback. He's going to be behind the quarterback and is going to have his opportunity to see both weak side to strong side and pick which lane is best. So when you combine his vision with the way they're going to utilize him, with the way his skill set is set up, this guy can do it all, and I think we're in for a treat, both fantasy and in real life, because this guy is going to be a tremendous rookie for the Giants.
All right, so I'm glad that you mentioned the Seahawks because you gave me a very nice transition, because we're going to jump to the next running back, who is my number two. So I've already got a lot of kickback on this, but I have a feeling you're going to be on the same page as me, Emery, because we both love this guy. You even more so than me because you've been on him from day one. Rashad Penny. Love him. Love the talent. Three down running back. The only concern that we have is a little bit of the pass protection, but he can learn and develop that facet. But I'm looking at this, and I see a lot of people saying, oh, the Seahawks offensive line. And I think people forget two additions. They traded for Dwayne Brown halfway through last year, and then they picked up DJ Fluker from the Giants, who, granted, is awful in pass protection, but he was way above average in run blocking. So I think Penny behind that offensive line is not as bad as people think he is. Not to mention his talent, I think similar to Saquon Barkley with the Giants, I don't think the offensive line is as big as a factor as people make it out to be.
And they get Fant back from injury, and they also drafted DeMarco Jones, and you got to assume Ifedi will get better, and also they have a blocking tight end that they drafted as well. Plus, you have the element of Russell Wilson. What was missing from the offense was the back with vision and game-breaking speed. That's what they lost when they lost Marshawn Lynch. And now you have Penny. I'm glad. This is why I love life. I love living, because you watch people on Twitter talk about running back value, draft running back in the fifth round, and my top three graded running backs all went in the first round. So everyone out there can, you know what they can do with their opinions on the backfield. And the reason why Penny will work in this offense, because, again, Russell Wilson will keep that backside defender at bay. Penny will get to that second level with ease, and good luck chasing him down, because he can outrun angles. Otherwise, they wouldn't have had him return kickoffs. You have to be fast return kick. So, and pass pro is all about knowing who to block more so than blocking itself. A lot of times you mess up because you don't know who to block, and that's what causes hesitation, which allows backs to get run over or miss assignments. You also have another advantage of calling the scat call. Either I'm a flare out or sprint out. Either you're going to stop blitzing, or I'm going to be wide open for an easy reception. And 9 times out of 10, they're going to stop blitzing. Will then give you time back there in the pocket. So there's ways to get around it. But most importantly, pass pro for a back is all about knowing who to block.
So I joke okay. that when the Seahawks drafted Penny, like, his blocking fits right in with the rest of the team, because they don't really have anyone that believes in pass blocking. And, you know, I think with Penny, that I didn't expect him to go in the first round. I thought he'd go in the second or third round. It's tough for me to gauge his value. It's something I'm still, like, really thinking about, because, you know, sometimes you jump to conclusions and you want to continue to do your research. But with Penny, the questions were the third down ability, his blocking ability. So let's just ignore the blocking ability for now. There is still Chris Carson there, who they did really like, and there is CJ Procise. Now, Procise will play one game, and then he'll be done. And so Penny is locked and loaded into major work, which at the end of the day in fantasy is all we're looking for. Like, would we like a better offensive line? Absolutely. Like, who wouldn't want a better offensive line for their running back? But he's anytime a running back goes in the first round, they drafted him because they plan on using him and using him a lot. And we've seen the Seahawks offense do that. So here's one concern, and Emery, I'd like to get your opinion on this. When you watch San Diego State, there's a ton of runs under center with two tight end sets, and Seattle is much more of a shotgun team. Do you think that impacts his running style at all?
Not at all, because later on in the draft, they took a blocking tight end. So they're going to probably put one out there as well. In addition, plus they may run a lot of what we saw them do early on when they had Marshawn Lynch, when they were basically running under center or from the gun and utilizing the zone read. So I think they were looking for that back that can really see that backside cut. The guys that they brought in that they were cycling in really couldn't do that. They got rid of Alex Collins prematurely because I said he was the best back on their roster. They got rid of him. And the one guy that was able to do that from a vision perspective, they rarely gave the ball to in J.D. McKissick. They wanted to use him as a gadget guy. So now you have a guy that fits your mold of what a running back should look like from a stereotypical standpoint. Plus, he has the vision, he has the speed, and also has the power to break tackles. And I think it's just a great fit because if you look at his San Diego State tape, how many times he was running front side and saw that cut on the far backside and was able to weave his way through that without getting touched and then outrun safeties to the touch to the end zone.
Yeah, he had a top two vision for me in the class, him and Royce Freeman. So, I mean, my only question is how much involved does he get in the passing game? But at the end of the day, they drafted him in the first round. They're going to get him the football. So, therefore, even if I was a little bit lower on him than you were as the talent, I think that's one thing that's really important to separate in fantasy is that you don't just go stick with your evaluation no matter where they go. Landing spot is so key. And he hit a landing spot where not only does he have the draft capital, but he has the opportunity. So for me, I'm going to have a lot of Rashad Penny, even if I was lower on him than you were coming into the draft.
Well, let's talk about another great landing spot, and I'm going to have a lot of this guy if I can, and that's Darius Geis, because you talk about a great landing spot. The Redskins just finally fixed their running back position, and a tremendous value because of all this nonsense that just showed up all of a sudden the day before the draft, and everything that you've seen from the team themselves is like, hey, he doesn't smoke weed, he doesn't drink, he doesn't get in trouble with the law. The only thing that people complain about is he has a Marshawn Lynch type personality. Well, guess what Marshawn Lynch did for fantasy? He was only an RB1 year after year. Now, I don't have Geis as an RB1. I have him RB2, Emery. But I think the Redskins, for how many years we've been waiting for it, have finally fixed their running back issue.
Yeah, since Clinton Portis, you've been waiting for a back. And now their backfield looks good. I mean, you got Samaje Perine. You got Chris Thompson coming back. I think Rob Kelly's going to be the odd man out. And keep an eye on undrafted free agent Martez Carter out of Grambling. He's going to be a strong candidate to make the team because of the ties with Doug Williams and that program. And also, they do have Keith Marshall, but he's like CJ Prosise. You can't really depend on him because of the injuries. And when he was at his 100%, when he was fully healthy, he was a much better tailback than Todd Gurley at Georgia. The one injury kind of separated the two, and Gurley took off. So I think their running game is going to be excellent. I mean, it's funny when I was at the draft when he got picked, and they're running his highlights as they're playing hell to the Redskins. And I was like, yo, it made his highlights better. I was like, this is a perfect fit for Darius Geis. I think he's going to be a phenomenal pro.
Yeah, there was a lot of talk about Geis going 13th overall to the Redskins, that they were one of the teams that were connected with him. And, you know, some of the reports about Geis, I think it's more personality thing than anything off the field. You know, there are teams had trouble meeting with some of his meetings. He's very confrontational, all that stuff. But you know, you see that's the way he plays, too. He wants to run through your face and let you know about it. So that's not shocking to me. The only concern, again, is the pass catching work, because Gruden came out and said Chris Thompson's our guy. That's the guy we want to feature in that role. So he may get more of the two down work and some pass catches, and Thompson dominates that aspect of the game. So I think RB2 is pretty fair for Geis. But people talk about lack of draft capital. He still went in the second round, right? Like he might have gone a couple picks later than Kerryon Johnson, but that doesn't mean you draft Kerryon Johnson over Darius Geis in fantasy football. Geis is still the superior talent. He still has draft capital. We forget. Second round capital on a running back is still, that's a premium pick. Like, teams value their second round picks. They're not just throwing them away. Just because we thought he was going to go late one and he went mid two doesn't mean that it's the end of the world for Darius Geis. Like, I think people are overreacting. He fell in a great landing spot. He's going to beat out Perine. Like you said, Rob Kelly's probably not going to make the team. Good offensive line in DC. And, you know, I really like that fit for him. And if Chris Thompson struggles at all with health, he'll probably have that third down role and be that three down feature back. And we know Alex Smith is very comfortable dumping it off and passing it to the running back. So I really like the landing spot for Geis.
Well, and two more landing spots, and I actually have these guys back-to-back. I have Royce Freeman just inside my RB2s, and then I have Ronald Jones just outside Emery. And the numbers I have for them rushing and receiving are almost identical. The difference I come down to is if you look at C.J. Anderson last year, as poor as people would want to call that season, he was still RB17 in fantasy. The difference I have is, so I have Royce Freeman for around 7 touchdowns. Given the Buccaneers offense and what they do in the red zone, and you have Mike Evans, the two tight ends, and DeSean Jackson, that's the issue, is I don't have the same potential for basically touchdowns as I do for just so Jones. I have about 5 touchdowns, Royce Freeman about 7. That's really where the difference comes for me.
Here's the difference for me. And the trump card that Jones has over Freeman is that he doesn't have to get down to the goal line to score touchdowns. With that speed, it doesn't take him much. He flips field position. He can also hit the home run. So I think you can kind of push that
so
up a little bit.
Jones over Freeman. To be
absolutely,
clear.
Because I love okay. the. I think they have the potential to run the old Florida State fast break offense. You got Evans. You got Jackson. You got Justin Watson out of Penn. Shout out to the FCS. You also have Godwin that they drafted, Brait and O.J. Howard. They can really spread you out and make it a lot easier for a guy like Jones, who's an inside zone, outside zone runner, to where he can hit a lane and outrun you to the end zone. So I think his potential is going to be the long speed. I worry about the handcuff from a fantasy perspective out there in Denver. Is it going to be Booker and Freeman, or is it going to be Freeman, or will it be Booker? So you don't know. I think both backs will get work dealing with what we see, see how they're building that team. They're going to be a very good offense, much better than what the Vikings will be this year because of the one position, the quarterback. They got the better quarterback in Denver. Minnesota has Kirk Cousins. So I think with the weapons they added on the perimeter, also in the backfield and also at tight end, keep an eye on the Broncos. I just don't know from a running back perspective how much you can depend on both. I think both guys will take from each other.
Do we just say that Kirk Cousins is better than Case Keenum? Or Case Keenum is better than Kirk Cousins?
Yes.
Oh, no.
Well, okay, so we could choose that for when we come back, Elliot. So there you go. You can jump in on there and then give your opinion on Freeman and Jones. You got a few more running backs and then the wide receivers, which there's not a ton to get into for this year specifically. But we will cover that. It's Fantasy Sports Today on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. We finish things up.
Game time decisions.
I think that we should create our own fortune cookie company. Just give people a little bit more realistic prediction of their future.
Dose of reality?
Yeah, instead of just giving them a bunch of numbers and, oh, the sun will rise tomorrow. And
the stock you bought will tank?
Yeah.
The horse you bought can't run?
The horse you bought will suck. Your wife will leave you. You will get cancer.
That's a real bad one.
That'd be nice, though, Ken. And I'd say, enjoy dessert. You're getting cancer anyways.
Weekdays, 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific. Only on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Welcome back to the Fantasy Sports Today. Hooked on a feeling to talk about fantasy football. The NFL draft is in the books. Looking ahead way early next year. We'll be doing a lot of these little specials coming up until we get to the July, August time with the fantasy football craziness. All right, Elliot, I'm giving you 30 seconds to respond because this is a draft special. I know you want to talk about the Kirk Cousins thing, but we can't end up having like an argument.
No, not at all, man. I'm just gonna send Emery the "I disagree" GIF at the end of the show on Twitter, and then we can kind of move on and talk running backs. But you know, with Royce Freeman, I think he has a very similar impact to C.J. Anderson. Now, Freeman is one of the guys we talked about before, where his landing spot could really shoot him up the board. And the Broncos did say that they view Booker as a third down guy. I view Booker as a guy that should stay on the bench personally. But you know, Freeman, I think he's going to be able to take advantage. They've improved their O-line some. He's the guy that gets everything that's blocked for him. And those guys continue to get opportunities because they make coaches happy. So he's going to get a lot of touches. He's going to get some work. With Ronald Jones, I think he might be more of a DFS play because I still think they're going to keep him in that 14 to 17 touch range. I don't think he's going to get a ton of work there. They're probably going to involve him in the pass game. We talked about before the draft, the Bucs are about the best landing spot for anybody. Because their next best back is Peyton Barber. Like, they need help with the running back position. And I love what you talked about, where you can spread defenses out, get Jones in space, and have him use that home run speed. So I think he's going to have some monster games, and I think he's going to have some games where he gets, like, 9 carries for 30 yards and not a whole bunch. So I think there's going to be up and down with Jones, but his good is going to be better than Freeman, but Freeman's going to be more consistent, if that's a fair way to answer the question.
Well, that's fair. All right, two more running backs before we jump to the wide receivers. Sony Michel goes to the Patriots. He's basically Deion Lewis, is he not, Emery? And this is the fantasy frustration of the Patriots, as always, is go ahead and try to trust him. He'll probably be the top option, but week to week, who the hell knows what he's going to do?
Right, and also you got to look at Jeremy Hill, I think is a criminally underrated back. He has really
People
good...
forgot they signed him.
Exactly, and that's why I was like, wow, they took a running back in the first round, and they have one on their roster. But when you put it to the test that they're going to use him like Deion Lewis, a bigger version of it, I think that's true. So he'll probably get the 20 to 20 work, and then you'll see Jeremy Hill sort of take over inside the 20. And I think that's why you probably have to stay away from him. Now, in a PPR league, he's going to get the receptions and things of that nature. But you know, I can see Jeremy Hill having a Corey Dillon-like year because he has a really good vision. And I think that's something that's criminally underrated about his game.
So Sonny Michel's,
that's what we're doing, Elliot. We're drafting the last Patriots running back on the draft board, aren't we?
But it's the Patriots, like you said, it's a guessing game, right? Like Jonas Gray rushes for 4 touchdowns, and then the next week, you know, he misses an alarm, and now he's no longer in the NFL. It's kind of amazing what they do with running backs. But, you know, this is the first time the Patriots drafted a running back since Lawrence Maroney in the first round in 2006. And when they drafted him, he started 0 games that year.
Right.
So it's tough to trust their running backs. And then you talk about that Deion Lewis role, and I actually did some research on this morning, and it's so interesting the difference between Deion Lewis's numbers when Rex Burkhead was active and when Rex Burkhead was inactive. Because they get Burkhead highly involved. Lewis had 2 less touches per game. He had, I think, 5 of his 7 touchdowns in the 7 games that Burkhead missed, as opposed to the 12 that Burkhead played. His targets went up by 2 per game. You know, like, he was way more involved. And we talked about the pass-catching aspect of Deion Lewis. He had 35 targets last year, which was 45th in the NFL. And that's not terrible. Lewis is a more than capable receiver, so is Sonny Michel, but James White led the team in targets. I think he had like 79, which was top 10 in the NFL. And then Rex Burkhead actually had more targets than Deion Lewis did. And the Patriots target their running backs more than anybody else. But the problem is that they have guys that they really like to assign roles. So is he going to take James White's role on top of the Deion Lewis role? Because then he's a fantasy star. But if they have the Jeremy Hill takes Mike Gillisley's role, Sonny Michel takes Deion Lewis's role, and Rex Burkhead and James White are still active, it gets really tough, because even, like you mentioned, between the 20s, Deion Lewis only had 4 carries inside the 5-yard line last year, 19% of the total carries. And like, he scored 3 touchdowns on those, but they still didn't do it. So Michelle is one of these guys that I'm avoiding. If there's an injury or two, he could absolutely blow up, because we've seen what Deion Lewis did, but he's a guy that
But he's going to be drafted as an RB2, which is what people always do for Patriots running back. So that's the frustration here. All right, so one more real quick before we get to the sleeper one, which I know Emery's, and I'm on the same page, so I'm not even going to say who it is. But Kerryon Johnson, this one baffled me. They just basically drafted like another Theo Riddick. I say role-wise, he's not exactly Theo Riddick, but I just don't understand this situation, Emery. Am I missing something here?
I don't either. I know people were high on him, but he's like a non-athletic version of Theo Riddick. You know, he's not better than Riddick, nor is he better than Ameer Abdullah. I mean, does he put the ball on the ground? Because that's the biggest thing you worry about with Ameer Abdullah. So I don't see how he's going to crack the lineup. He's not better than Blunt. He's not better than Riddick. He's not better than Abdullah. I thought this was a whiff by Detroit.
He's going to crack the lineup because they just drafted him in the second round. That's how he's going to get on the football field.
That's the only reason why.
We've seen a third-round pick get cut in training camp when the Saints drafted a kid Pittman out of Ohio State. So,
and then Maurice Claret got cut for different reasons. There's no way they're not cutting Kerryon Johnson. But Kerryon Johnson, the way I always describe him, he's like Draymond Green, where he's not great at anything, but he's good at a whole bunch of stuff. Like, he's not spectacular at anything. So Theo Riddick's going to have that third-down role. Blunt's probably going to have the goal line work. I think Johnson's a pretty easy avoid.
Yeah. By the way, you said a different sport. This is always, I'll give you mine. This is one that I've always said for that comparison, Elliot. I've always said James Jones. He's really good at a bunch of stuff, but he's not exceptional. Like, there's not one thing he's terrific at. That was always my James Jones. I did the same thing you just did.
If Kerryon Johnson starts wearing a hoodie while playing in the NFL, though, I'm going to have so many Kerryon Johnson shares.
then you'll be on board. All right, Emery, give me your sleeper because I know who he is. He's the same one I have, and he's got, correct me if I'm wrong, but he plays in the desert.
Yeah, and just a quick point about the Patriots, another handcuff to worry about is Cordarrelle Patterson. They're going to utilize him, and so you don't know how they're going to do it. That's another handcuff. But I do like Chase Edmonds. I like 3 guys, actually. But Chase Edmonds, Trenton Cannon, we talked about, I think is a good fit out here in New York. But from a pure running back perspective, that's vision, that's fluidity, that's elusiveness, that's footwork. He is better than David Johnson. As a receiver, David Johnson is better. He's not a natural running back. He's a guy that has to really take both his feet off the ground to make a lateral cut. That's going to get you stuffed at the line of scrimmage, which a lot of times we see him get stuffed. You know, but he is, 6'2", 230. He's going to break some tackles. But from a pure running back perspective, Chase is the best back. But because he's 5'9", 205, and teams are dumb, teams are going to look at him as a scat back, which is fine until until David Johnson does what David Johnson does, is miss a game or two because of a minor injury or something like that. And then Edmonds gets in there and he goes off. So I think he's got to keep an eye on. And there's to be honest, there is no competition for that number two spot. Maybe DJ Foster, but other than that, there's no competition for RB2 on that offense, so he's going to have a major role.
You have a sleeper, Elliot?
I'll tell you that I was so excited for John Kelly going into the draft, and then he went in the sixth round, and then I got a lot less excited. But if we can talk about handcuffs, if Todd Gurley goes down, I think John Kelly can have that RB2 role and step up. And whenever you look at a lot of guys, like as much as you might like Chase Edmonds, like David Johnson's probably going to get the volume of the work, right? Mm-hmm. When you find these handcuffs, you want to find guys that, one, can already catch passes, which Edmonds can do, and two, that if their guy goes down, can they step up and have that workhorse role for 3-4 games? Because those are the guys that win you fantasy championships, right? Mm-hmm. It's week 9, everyone's searching their waiver wire, but you already have them. And I'm going to stick with John Kelly as if Todd Gurley goes down, I think John Kelly can have a big impact on an NFL offense.
Who's their number two? Is it Brown?
Yeah.
He's better than Brown.
As of right now.
I don't think Malcolm Brown's very good.
Right.
And the other thing that gets me excited is McVay is a very creative mind and likes his guys that can catch passes. So maybe John Kelly and Todd Gurley get on the field at the same time. Maybe they do a couple different things. So I'm going to say Kelly is a deep sleeper.
That's a very deep one. All right, let's jump the wide receivers. Like I said, they have a lot of time here left. But, you know, that's the real thing here is, Emery, I don't have a single wide receiver higher than wide receiver 52. I don't even have a wide receiver 4 for this year because the class, to me, as we've mentioned before, wasn't a very strong class. But also, there's not a lot of great landing situations, and the ones that did land in a great situation potentially have some concerns. Do you have, like, I guess this is kind of a twofold question, is who would be your top wide receiver on your board as of today for fantasy purposes, and do you think any of them can reach wide receiver for status?
James Washington in Pittsburgh. They get away from a guy that was touchdown dependent, who only caught deep balls because he could cradle it, and add a guy that's a real polished route runner and also has good acceleration and can catch and can ball. I think that's going to really open up the Steelers offense because, you know, at first it was just Brown and Juju Smith-Schuster last year, obviously. But when you look at Martavis Bryant, to me, he never was a good wide receiver. He just caught deep balls because he could cradle it. He couldn't really catch. You add a guy in James Washington, teams are not going to focus on Juju. They're going to focus on Brown. Hey, James, beat us. And he can do it because he did it all throughout his career at Oklahoma State.
What are your thoughts, Elliot?
Yeah, I mean,
your top guy.
I like Washington of the top guys. I thought had a fantastic landing spot. He basically takes the Martavis Bryant role, and he's. I agree with you that he's a better route runner. You know, DJ Moore goes to Carolina. Cam Newton historically struggled with the underneath pass in terms of his accuracy. I think it's second worst in the NFL, and according to Scott Barrett of PFF. And then Christian McCaffrey does a lot of that as well. So they're kind of really building that skill set, but I don't know if he's going to develop right away into that downfield threat that some people think he is. Calvin Ridley, I think, is a great NFL landing spot. Don't think it's a very good fantasy landing spot.
Well, let's talk about him real quick. And as we do it real quick, I'll say goodbye to YouTube. Stay tuned. Fantasy Best Friends Forever up next. So all these Twitch, all the videos, all the stuff like that, we're sticking around on radio, so listen in. But video, bye-bye for now. But Calvin Ridley, as you said, falls all the way to the Falcons. You got Julio Jones. You got terrific running backs. You got a terrific offense. The fact that he could step in as the number two, pushing Sanu to the slot, and also face that number two coverage, it could really surprise this year, and maybe he's the one that gets the wide receiver for Elliott.
He's got a shot. He's going to have some big weeks because he's going to have some weeks where he catches 3 passes for 120 yards and 2 touchdowns because he can get vertical, and that's what he does. And that's what he's going to compliment Julio Jones. He's going to help Muhammad Sanu. He's going to help Matt Ryan. But he's not a guy that I want as a weekly starter because I think I'm going to get in trouble if I rely on him.
Yeah, because he's what I always said, Emery, you know this, he's a lesser version of Amari Cooper.
Yeah, and I just find it interesting that the league allowed him to fall to Atlanta. You know, it's just from a football, like you said, from a football perspective, it's going to work. But from fantasy perspective, it's going to be interesting because there's so many different options. And you can't really count on them week to week.
I would like throw one more situation out there with the Denver Broncos. And then I know pre-draft Deshaun Hamilton was one of your guys, and one of my guys was Cortland Sutton. So apparently the Broncos see a combination of what we see. But they basically drafted Cortland Sutton, who has a very similar game to Demaryius Thomas, and Deshaun Hamilton, who has a very similar game to Emmanuel Sanders. And it's clear that these guys aren't going to make year one impacts because of who they're behind. But my guess is that next year they plan on both of them being starters and moving on from Thomas.
Well, so that's what I said, Elliot. So I tweeted that immediately when this happened is people aren't paying attention, but both these wide receivers are over 30. both these receivers have team outs next year where the dead cap is very little if they want to move on from both of them. But let's just say one of them sticks around. Let's say Demaryius Thomas or Emmanuel Sanders, one, and they only move on from one, and they let Sutton and Hamilton both step up. Specifically for this year, I think the opportunity, because of how good Hamilton is, especially out of the slot, Emery, I think this year he has the better track to make the impact, where Sutton and Hamilton can both be in the mix next year.
I would also keep an eye on a guy that was on the team last year in Carlos Henderson, because he's legit good. So he may have the leg up over the two rookies, depending on how quickly they grasp the offense. But it's so tough, man. I would be hard pressed to keep. I mean, I would even go back to the old Houston Cougar days with Keenum in the spread, with all those options out there at receiver. And because your fourth corner is not better than Deshaun Hamilton. He's not. And so let's have at it. Let's have a free fall. But they also have two good tight ends in Jake Butt and Troy Fumagalli. So there's a ton of weapons out there in Denver. Denver's going to be a fun team to watch this year.
All right, so let's talk about two other wide receivers a little bit further down the list. Anthony Miller goes to Chicago. They need a number two. Kevin White looks like a pure bust at this point, but more so because of injuries. We really haven't even seen much from him. But also Michael Gallup goes to the Cowboys, who need a number one. You don't want Allen Hurns to be your number one. Not that I think Gallup is ready for that. But Elliot, either one of these guys on your radar for this year specifically, I mean, we could talk Dynasty at another time, but for redraft purposes, either one of them interests you.
Well, Gallup's hard to ignore based on the fact that there's just so many targets open there. And, you know, I think Gallup's best suited is a wide receiver too, but he runs good routes. He can win contested catch situations. He has great hips, and he's great with the ball in his hands. So, you know, he's interesting for me as a late round guy because he's going to have opportunity. With Anthony Miller, I think that's a dream landing spot. You know, getting the former Oregon head coach and Matt Nagy is the head coach now. And, you know, they're going to have this fun offense. He complements what Allen Robinson does so well. Trubisky's actually thrown very good contested catch situations as well, which is something Miller's been great at. And we know how great Miller is with the ball in his hands. And Herflick from Oregon ran a ton of screen routes and bubble screens and get his receivers the ball. So I think Anthony Miller is clearly wide receiver two in Chicago. He's an older player. He can step in right away. And I think that's a great landing spot for him.
Yeah, I worry about Trubisky. That's the big wild card. How good is he? You know, and that's – they have options. And so we'll see if he can get the ball to him, you know, especially being a number two overall pick, which was a reach.
Yeah, I think so. All right, you know what? I'm going to bring up one more. We got about 2 minutes left. Emery, I think Deion Kane, talent-wise in his situation, is an intriguing one to watch through OTAs in the preseason, because let's talk about the fact if Andrew Luck is healthy, finally, there's an opportunity here for a need on this team at wide receiver.
I think the guy on that team would probably be Dorrice Fountain out of Northern Iowa. To me, Deion Kane is kind of an okay guy. I think they have like 17 Deion Kanes on their roster already on the back end. But
Chester Rogers?
Yeah, Chester Rogers, those a pack of guys, right? But Dorrice Fountain, to me, has the biggest upside. Kane is still a quarterback playing receiver. You know, he's starting to get a little bit, up to speed of how the little nuances of the position, but I still think he's a quarterback at heart. So he'll never get past that wide receiver four role within any offense he plays in.
Was he was there a tremendous high school option that you like, Elliot?
I want to say Equanimeous St. Brown could possibly win that job, but, you know, that's
no!
tough. That's
stop!
Quite frankly, I just wanted to bring him up so you had an opportunity to tell me I was an idiot, Jake. That's all I was trying to do.
I was so trying to, like, make the conversations. Like, I was in so many conversations with people on Twitter about, like, hey, he fell this way. I didn't want to say, like, I told you so, but I was trying to do it without saying I told you so. And I was just trying to say, like, look, I'm interested in his career. Maybe I am wrong, but you know what I said. I think we're going down the Jalen Strong path again, and we're trying to project somebody who just hasn't ever been able to separate despite those abilities, and everybody's blaming the quarterback. All right, 15 seconds. Do we care about the tight ends, guys?
I mean, Troy Fumagalli going to Denver is huge. Yeah, I think that's a great fit. And also, Mark Andrews going to Baltimore. I like they drafted a better tight end in the, third round than he did in the first round.
Agreed.
Yeah. All right. He's Emery Hunt. Make sure you follow him, FD Game Plan. He is Elliot Crist. Make sure you follow him at Elliot Crist 1L. Follow them the entire offseason, as well as myself. Tons of fantasy football knowledge for you, as you guys can tell. We'll be back again, but stay tuned. Fantasy Best Friends Forever. Up next, Fantasy Sports Radio Network.